Okay, Mr. May, please proceed.
In this appeal from the District Court, Your Honors, Dragon raised several claim construction issues. It's important, however, to first understand the background of the 444 patent. The patent claims priority to an application filed 25 years ago in 1992. It disclosed a recording and playback device designed to record a broadcast program during an interruption, for example, when you have to take a phone call, while allowing a user to immediately and seamlessly resume watching the program right from the point of interruption. Indeed, Claim 1 recites a specific recording for the interrupted broadcast program information. It does not matter whether or not a device is a continuous recording device. Claim 1 does not cite any other broadcast program information before or after the interrupted broadcast program information. Now, the main dispute in this appeal is the District Court's finding of alleged prosecution disclaimer of continuous recording devices. Notably, defendants now have backed away from the District Court's alleged disclaimer of all continuous recording devices and argue instead that only certain types of continuous recording devices were disclaimed. Your Honors, you all know the standard for prosecution disclaimer is extremely high. It requires a clear and unmistakable disavowal. This is not the case here. During prosecution, the examiner rejected claims over the prior art reference SATA multiple times. Each time, applicant argued that SATA is a continuous recording device and expressly declined to disclose the implementation of SATA's playback function, and that would require some addressing command data. If applicant intended to disclaim any and all continuous recording devices, applicant could have said that without discussing the specific implementation of the playback or recording function. And if the alleged disclaimer was so clear and unmistakable, the examiner would have allowed it over SATA without issuing more rejections based on SATA. In the end, the alleged disclaimer has nothing to do with allowance of the 444 patent. In fact, the solely limitation we just discussed, that's a very narrow limitation, was the very reason.
Do you believe that our prosecution disclaimer law requires that you were successful in making that argument? You are quoting to me, well, the examiner didn't immediately allow the patent after this disclaimer. Do you believe it's necessary, kind of like in the field of is collateral estoppel or issue preclusion, do you believe it's necessary that your argument resulted in success before the PTO in order for disclaimer to be found?
No, Your Honor, not at all. So, in fact, defendants argued Dragon made that argument. That's not Dragon's position. Dragon merely recited the well-established case law that prosecution as a whole, in addition to specific set of portions, should be considered, have relevancy in the analysis of disclaimer. So here, the examiner's actions, subsequent actions, and the reason for allowance are relevant for us to understand the entire picture of our alleged prosecution disclaimer. It's Dragon's position that individual portions of prosecution history that were discussed at length in parties' briefs and the prosecution history as a whole do not support a finding of prosecution disclaimer here. And moreover, even if the district court was reasonable in interpreting that there might be disclaimer here, as we all know, the case law is clear. When the alleged disavowal is ambiguous, even amenable to multiple reasonable interpretations, there cannot be any disclaimer. And it's Dragon's position that Dragon's interpretation of the prosecution history, the specific cited portions, is also reasonable, or even more reasonable than the district court's interpretation. Because it is always Dragon's position that applicant distinguished SATA on a single, not multiple, basis. Your Honors, you may ask, why did applicant mention SATA being a continuous recording device at all? because it provides a context for the actual distinction. Because SATA being a continuous recording device makes it more critical for SATA to disclose the exact implementation of its playback function. Again, this, you know, the priority of this patent goes back to 1992. If SATA is a continuous recording device, it appears that SATA does not have a simple on and off recording implementation. Therefore, it would require some addressing command data to identify the portion that was being played back. But there's no such implementation disclosed in SATA. That's the reason the applicant argued that SATA should not render the claims unpatentable. Therefore, there's no disclaimer. Consequently, the district court's claim constructions for the terms, the broadcast program information, to begin a recording by initiating storage of the broadcast program information set memory and record key are simply incorrect.
Let's just say for a minute, I were to agree with you hypothetically, that there was no disclaimer. Don't you still have a problem here because of the very claim language itself, which says said record key, it says that recording occurs when said record key is first actuated to begin a recording. I mean, so that would seem to say that the recording occurs when you first hit the record key.
Right.
That there's continuous recording. Right.
You want to understand the confusion. I think this confusion actually was also appeared in the district court's decision. As I mentioned earlier, the 444 patent does not care about other recorded program information. Only the recording, a specific recording that was interrupted, the interrupted broadcast program information. Your Honor, if you read Claim 1, the language here makes very clear to begin a recording, right? You have to use a set record keys first actuated to begin a recording. So if our focus, which is the 444 patent's invention anyway, is on that interrupted portion only, then it does not matter if there's a continuous recording device or not, because there might be multiple recording going on at the same time. We don't care about something, a device such like SATA that starts from the beginning, right, without record key being pressed. As long as...
Do you need your interpretation of broadcast program information in order to maintain that argument that you're making right now? Do you think you do? Do you think you need us to agree with your interpretation?
Not necessarily. We need the court to agree with us. There's no disclaimer. Then... I think the language itself is very clear that begin a recording. So as long as accused device has a record key to begin that particular recording of the interrupted portion, even if there was other recording going on simultaneously, that does not matter here. So Dragon would request the court to find there's no disclaimer. Then the only claim construction issue remaining for the broadcast program information is the term transmitted to all users. And that, I think, impacts AT&T only. So in that situation, it's our position that there are two competing dictionary definitions. There's no intrinsic evidence to support all user. In fact, that introduced additional ambiguities, right? That all users having a recording device or all users in a particular location. So if the court also agrees with us on the all use, I mean, that all users should not be there, then we really don't care one way or another how the court construes this term. In fact, this term could be just plain and ordinary meaning.
Now,
so,
can you please tell me why the sentence at page 1444 isn't a disclaimer? I mean, there are two primary places where I understand you to be distinguishing SATA,
right,
or SATA.
Yes, yeah.
1444 and 1393. So why don't you tell me why I should disregard what appears to me to be a very reasonable and correct reading of this sentence? The sentence accordingly, the instant invention. Are you with me? It's in the
yeah, correct. I'm with you, Your Honor.
Accordingly, the instant invention as claimed is further distinguished from the structure of SATA. So you're saying it's distinguished, now I'm going to give you the reason, wherein recording, as explained at column 6, line 44 to 49, is continuous and never initiated or stopped, and wherein, now we're getting to a second reason, initiation of playback requires some addressing command data. So why isn't, I mean, that first wherein clause, it looks to me like you've distinguished SATA from the present invention on two grounds.
Right.
The first is SATA is continuous, and the second is about the initiation of playback.
Right.
You want me to believe that you only distinguish SATA on the basis of the initiation of playback. But this sentence seems quite clear that you distinguish SATA on two grounds. The fact that it continuously records, and the second ground on initiation of playback. That is unquestionably, I think, the most natural reading of this sentence. So what am I missing?
Okay, Your Honor, actually that's also the district court and defendant's reading, but that's not the only.
I'm aware of that.
Right, that's not the only.
It didn't escape me.
Right, Your Honor, I agree, but that's not the only reasonable interpretation, because if you continue to read that, it talks about wherein initiation of playback requires some addressing command data. You know,
yes, but that's a second distinction. Those are two separate distinctions. This is not uncommon.
Right.
I'm sure you know this,
right,
that when an examiner cites a reference against you, you come back with an arsenal of reasons why he's wrong. It's not uncommon to have more than one reason that you think the examiner's wrong. And so here it seems that you articulated two quite discrete reasons why you believed the examiner was wrong.
Right. We understand Your Honor's interpretation. I believe that is one of the reasonable interpretations. But Dragon does not take the position that there are two different grounds. There's only one ground here. And especially the expressly undisclosed, the word expressly was bolded and underlined. And again, the test for prosecution disclaimer.
But how can they be one and the same? The first one is about starting and stopping and continuity.
Right.
The second one is about requiring command data. It doesn't even seem like the same ground.
Yeah, let me explain, Your Honor, why it's this. So why, as I mentioned, why did Epic mention the first part at all? Because the SATA being a continuous recording device provides a context for the actual distinction. Because if the SATA is being continuous recording, then it would naturally, the question would be, how the playback is being implemented. That's the reason, even in a continuous recording device, the playback function and its implementation is super important. So that's the reason here, the applicant argued that, first of all, SATA is being a continuous recording device.
You are then, well into your rebuttal time, and I don't want you to use it all up.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah.
Why don't you save the rest?
All right.
Morning, Your Honors. Michael Murray for five of the defendants. Just a small housekeeping matter. I'm actually going to take 10 minutes of the time. I think I'm in the record for 9, but by agreement of the parties, I'm going to take 10. So I'd like to start with the statement that Dragon's counsel just made, that Judge Andrews found that there was a disclaimer of all recording devices and that we're somehow backing away from that. That's not correct. If we look at what Judge Andrews actually said, he said, quote, "The applicants repeatedly distinguish SATA on the basis that SATA records continuously and the claimed device does not begin recording until the user actuates a record key."
So, do you think your two best places, why don't you tell me in the prosecution history what you think the two clearest examples, because I mean, this is a question of law, right? Disclaimer, question of law.
Yes.
So, it's great whatever the district court said about it is lovely and can be persuasive, but why don't you actually show me why, as a matter of law, since I have to decide it de novo, the two best places or three best places where you think that disclaimer is clearest in the record?
Well, it's actually hard to choose, Your Honor, because there's an abundance of good disclaimers.
Nonetheless, I'm asking you to.
Okay. So let me point the court to 1446, 1447. There's a statement there.
1446 to 47. Okay.
1446 to 47 in the appendix. Quote, "It is not clear by any means that SATA even intends to provide any control at all over the point at which recording or playback begins."
I apologize, but could you tell me where you are on page 46 or 47?
1446. I'm reading off my notes. So, so at the bottom of 1446, it is not clear by any means that SATA even intends to provide, and then continuing on 1447, any control at all over the point at which recording or playback begins and ends. Thus, construed in the light most favorable to SATA, again, for the sake of argument only, the prior art device at best is continually recording and playing back. And then the last sentence in that paragraph, since the prior art makes no mention whatever of the desirability of controlling the point at which recording is to begin, it cannot be argued that it would have been obvious to add and change structure as necessary to achieve an unsuggested function. So here, applicant is arguing that it wouldn't have been obvious to add a record key to SATA because SATA is always recording. It's a continuous recording device, which is really the same way that the accused devices operate in this case. When you turn the device on, it's recording. When, in the case of the cable TV boxes, when you start the cable TV box up and start watching a show, it's automatically recording. You don't need to push a record key in order to begin recording. So that certainly is one good example of the disclaimer. Your Honor pointed to...
I think part of the difficulty with what you just cited to me, for me, is these seem to be simply characterizations of what SATA, or SATA, however you say it, discloses, and doesn't seem like a clear statement that this is not what we do, or we are distinct because, you know, that a clear and unmistakable disclaimer is usually this is what they do and we don't do it. This statement seems a little bit more difficult for me to see the clarity of this particular one. Is there a somewhere in here where you want to point out that they don't just say SATA is continually recording, but that we don't continually record? Or that's contrary to this invention?
Right. There are multiple times in the prosecution history where they point out that they have a record key that begins the recording process. And the claims were amended, actually, to make it clear that when you activate the cord, that when you push the record key, you begin the recording process. And so they continually pointed out that SATA continuously records, and it wouldn't have been obvious to add a record key that initiates recording.
I see.
So
okay, what is your next best one then?
Well, I could point to 1393. About the middle of the page, SATA's device not only fails to include a record key, it cannot accommodate a record key since it is always recording. So again, pointing out that SATA is a continuous recording device and it doesn't have the record key, which was the thing that they were emphasizing repeatedly to the Patent Office as distinguishing their invention. They have a record key to start the recording process. SATA doesn't need a record key. Now, I'd also like to point out that, you know, much as Dragon wants to make this appeal all about disclaimer, it's really not all about disclaimer. The plain language of the claims completely supports the claim constructions issued by the district court. For example, to begin a recording by initiating storage of the broadcast program information in said memory in a term, the court construed as being to begin a recording by causing the storage of broadcast program information that otherwise would not have been stored in said memory unit. So Dragon emphasizes the a recording part of that and tries to argue, using their unusual construction of the broadcast program information, arguing that the broadcast program information is a different term than broadcast program information and has a completely different meaning, which the court rejected. But they're not really accounting for this language by initiating storage of broadcast program information. When you begin the recording, the plain language of the claim, you initiate storage of the broadcast program information. That clearly means, just by its plain language, that if you don't do that, then you will not be storing the broadcast program information. What else could initiating storage mean? And Dragon has never really grappled with the plain language of the claim. The plain language of the claim means you initiate storage, you start storage by pushing the record key. And that fully supports the court's construction and supports the stipulated entry of judgment of non-infringement, because that's not how any of the accused devices work. You turn the device on and it begins recording. You don't have to push any button to initiate storage. Now, Dragon argues in the gray brief at 17 that Judge Andrews relied solely on the prosecution disclaimer to support his construction of this term, and that's just not true. Judge Andrews rejected Dragon's construction because it, quote, eliminates to begin a recording and instead focuses on retrieval of information. This is in the
appendix.
Excuse me?
You were about to give the appendix site.
I was, Your Honor. That's in the appendix at page 112. So the problem that Judge Andrews recognized with Dragon's construction of to begin a recording is it's all about retrieving information. It's not actually about beginning a recording, because Dragon has never, again, grappled with the plain language of the claim. So Judge Andrews did not rely solely on the disclaimer to support this term. Finally, the specification just plainly supports that construction too. The specification says, quote, basic operation of the instant invention begins with the user watching or listening to desired programming and recorder 10 off. So that's the applicant, and this is the appendix at 125, which is column 5, lines 20 to 22 of the patent. Basic operation of the instant invention. In every embodiment in this patent, in every embodiment, the recorder is off, you push the record button, and then the recorder comes on and initiates storage of the broadcast program information.
But we shouldn't read embodiments into the claim, right? I mean, I think your stronger argument is that the claim language itself requires that prosecution history supports that construction, but we shouldn't read preferred embodiments or, you know, it's the only disclosed embodiment, but what basis do we have to read that into the claim?
I think the stronger argument is the plain language of the claim, the disclaimer, of course, because they explained this language to the Patent Office over and over and over again and said it's not about continuous recording, it's about you need a record key to start the recording process. So certainly that's a stronger argument, Your Honor. I agree. But I think when an inventor or an applicant starts talking about the instant invention, the operation of the instant invention, certainly I think that's something you can take into account. And it's the only way that it's done in the specification. I'm going to have to stop here before using up time that was reserved for another attorney. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Hawes, representing AT&T, DirecTV, and Dish Networks. I'd actually like to start with a question you asked Judge Stoll.
Are you planning on covering only the exact same things he covered or something different?
Something different, Your Honor. Okay. We have a, as was mentioned by the other counsel, we have a different non-infringement argument for AT&T. But there was a point that I just wanted to clarify, which is you had asked about the question about how, even if they get the construction they want, how that works. And the answer is that it's circular in that they argued that program information was just the stuff that happened after you pressed the record key. So because they had a circular argument where they said, well, the only thing that's program information is what happens after the record key, and then they said the record key initiates program information, they basically made that language, the begin language, surplusage. Because there was no way, the way they defined it, for you to ever have program information before you press the record key. So it was a circularity argument that allowed them to do that. The second thing I'd point out is that on appendix page 1447, that was previously discussed, and this is about five and six lines down, they did say this does not achieve the utility of the instant invention.
Are we still on the same issue? You said you are going to cover a different issue.
I am, Your Honor, and I just want to point out one thing in the appendix, and then I'm going to move to broadcast.
So 1447?
Yes, and so we discussed the language at the beginning of that paragraph, and I just want to point out that right after that language it says, this does not achieve the utility of the instant invention. And you, Your Honor, asked about how did it relate to the invention, and that's where they said it related to the invention. And that's the same instant invention language that you pointed out in 1444. Moving to the broadcast program information issue. Dragon took the position below that there is no need to construe broadcast program information. And so the district court, looking for the plain and ordinary meaning of that term, looked to the specification. And Dragon agrees there's no definition of that term in the specification. So the district court turned and looked to technical dictionaries from the proper time frame. The district court made a finding of fact that the person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood broadcast to require sending it to all users. Dragon does not contradict the fact that that was a finding of fact. We have said that Teva gives deference to that finding of fact. Again, Dragon does not contradict that. And what that means is that Dragon needed to show that that was clearly erroneous under the Teva standard. Again, nowhere in their briefing does Dragon ever assert that that was clearly erroneous.
Where, can you tell me where the finding of fact is precisely?
Yes, Your Honor.
In the opinion?
So if you turn to the claim construction, Your Honor, and I'm looking at Appendix, page 107, and this is right at the bottom, Your Honor. It's the third line from the bottom and the second line from the bottom. I find as a fact, based on the technical dictionaries AT&T introduced, that broadcast information is information transmitted to all users. Dragon never disagrees with that. Dragon never disagrees that Teva requires that to be clearly erroneous for it to be overturned. And Dragon never takes the position in any of its briefs that this was clearly erroneous. This court should start from the foundation that the person of ordinary skill in the art at the relevant time understood broadcast to require it be transmitted to all users.
Okay, so this is the different argument because AT&T transmits in a different way, right?
That's right.
All right, I get it. No.
This is an independent non-infringement position for AT&T.
For just your client.
For one of my clients, yes, Your Honor. So that leaves us with only two arguments they make. The first argument they make is, well, but you don't find the all users definition in the intrinsic evidence. Well, first of all, your standard for overturning the plain and ordinary meaning is that it be unambiguously clear that there's a different meaning, and they don't argue that. But second of all, it actually supports the district court. The reason the all users language isn't in the intrinsic evidence is because the word broadcast is in the intrinsic evidence. And the district court said the person of ordinary skill in the art reading this would understand that broadcast means all users. Why then would the intrinsic evidence say it yet again when it was already using the word broadcast?
I need to ask you a factual question very
sure.
quick because your time is out, but I'll ask. You, there was a stipulation of non-infringement. Was there a stipulation of non-infringement on the basis of this issue?
There was, Your Honor. If you look at AT&T's stipulation of non-infringement, and that's in the appendix at page 11 and 12.
Okay. So even if for some reason we didn't buy into the disclaimer argument, your client also has a stipulation of non-infringement which would be independently upholdable in light of the transmitted to all users.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay, I understand your argument. Thank you very much. Mr. May, do you have, I'm sorry, your time is up. Thank you for your argument. Mr. May, you have some rebuttal time. It's the problem when you split up arguments. You know, you can run out of time.
You know, I'll just a few points regarding prosecution disclaimer. And I think it's important to know that the parties do not agree the plain meaning, plain language of this claim controls. So now think about it. If the accused devices do not have any record key, why do they care about prosecution disclaimer? We all agree the claim one of the 444 patent cares about, I mean, specifically recites a record key is first actuated to begin a recording for the interrupted portion. So why that matters? And that actually also relevant to whether the disclaimer is clear and unmistakable. The fact that SATA being a continuous recording device leaves the question where the record key is implemented. That's the reason applicants always argue in a single sentence. It's not a situation where Judge Moore mentioned earlier, this is what they do, and we didn't do that for two reasons. Here's reason one, here's reason two. No, applicant didn't do that. In multiple examples, opposing counsel pointed out, Dragon always go into detailed, I mean, applicant goes into detailed implementation. There's no record key being mentioned at all. That's the reason applicant distinguished SATA. So even if the district court and the interpretation is reasonable, there's also alternative reasonable interpretation. Because the standard for prosecution disclaimer is so high that if your honor finds this disclaimer is arguable, it's not clear and unmistakable, then there should be no disclaimer at all. Then quickly on the transmitted to all users.
You have a very steep hill to climb here. I mean, you've got a judge that has had many, 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 many patent cases, and I believe he said in his opinion, if I'm not mistaken, this is the clearest case of disclaimer he's ever seen.
The second clearest.
Second clearest. Okay, well, there you go. Thank you for the correction.
Right. So, Your Honor, so that's the reason we disagree. I think a lot of confusion even today is what claim language talks about. And that's the reason I started with my oral argument that claim one, I mean, the invention talks about interrupted portion only. So we really don't care whether there's a separate recording device that is continuous recording. I think within that context, we believe the district court's language is unnecessarily strong, which actually triggered additional proceedings. And for the reasons I just mentioned earlier, and also in the briefs, we request that this court vacate the district court's claim construction.
Okay, thank you, Mr. May. Okay, so you can stand up and sit down for your fifth and sixth time in just a second. Next case is 2016-2468, Dragon versus Dish Network.